the top players and legends to the very best analysts around the world from wherever the beautiful game is played. This is BTP. Now, we're talking football.
Well, hello, guys, and welcome back to the Man City podcast. I'm your host, Nicola McCarthy, and I'm delighted again to be joined by Paul Dickoff, former City striker, of course, and journalist and commentator, Paul Serres. Guys, how are we?
Yeah, very well, thank you.
Very well, thanks, yeah.
Yeah, especially after two wins in a week, always makes it a bit better, doesn't it?
Exactly. We've plenty to talk about, so let's get stuck straight in. Okay, I'm going to start with the Bristol game, the 2-1 win over Bristol in the first leg of the League Cup semi-final. Well, first of all, Paul Dickoff, what were your thoughts on that game? It took a late Aguero winner. What were your thoughts about that?
Yeah, the main man, Sergio, again, you know, got two goals in the cup against Burnley and then followed it up coming off the bench and getting the goal. But I think the game seemed to surprise quite a lot of people about how Bristol City approached it. I remember us chatting last week about it and talking about Lee Johnson and his style and how his team would probably come with no fear. And I think Bristol City have got to take a huge amount of credit for how they performed with and without the ball. But when you've got quality on the bench, to bring off the bench like Sergio Aguero, it just takes one chance. I think the 20-odd minutes he was on, 25 minutes he was on, he only had 8 touches of the ball, but ends up scoring the winning goal. So it shows you that at Premier League level, the amount of quality and class, especially on Man City, I've got. Look, I wax lyrical all the time about Aguero and about the strength and depth in City squad, but that's, you look at all the tight games that they've had this year. You know, West Ham, the Southampton, Bournemouth away at the start of the season. It's been that extra bit of quality that they've got within the squad that sets them apart from everybody else when they're not at their best.
When you can bring Sergio Aguero off the bench, you're not going to complain too much, are you?
No, not at all.
Paul Serres, as Paul Dickoff just said, Sergio, there's been a lot of talk around Sergio this season. But 2 goals against Burnley in the FA Cup, and as we've just said, came off the bench against Bristol City and scored the winner. Still a top quality world class player.
I don't think there's any doubt about his ability, and I think that most of the talk about Sergio Aguero is, as most things are in football these days, sort of media driven. I think if you, of course. I'm sure will attest to, strikers love to score goals, and scoring a goal is a great thing. But if you look at Sergio Aguero and the way that he celebrates when City score and it's not him sticking it in the back of the net, I think that's more indicative of how happy he is at the club at the moment. And he's always said that. He's always said that he's happy at City. He wants to stay until the end of his contract before going home to Independiente, the club that he supported as a boy. Whether he leaves, you know, in 6 months' time or in 2 years' time, he'll leave as a City legend. And, you know, he's never hidden. He's never shirked responsibility. Yeah. And, you know, he's a wonderful footballer. Just to step on to that Bristol City game, I think it showed two things. I think it showed that that City, yeah, it is about the quality that you can bring off the bench, you know, to go on and win games, fresh legs, 8 touches and 1 goal, it speaks for itself. Yep. But also it's the mentality that we spoke about last week, that desire to win at all costs, that desire to keep going right to the end. And, you know, all of the great teams that we've seen in recent years have all had that mentality, that desperation to win. Even though there was another 90 minutes to come, it was absolutely crucial to every player on the pitch to win that game. And on the other side, I think it also showed how teams can get at Manchester City. That high line is, you know, you can exploit that high line. I know we're going to obviously speak about the Liverpool game, you know, coming up, but that will be where, with the width that they have, the pace that they have in wide areas, that will be where Klopp looks to exploit City. And all credit, we did speak about Lee Johnson and the style of Bristol City last week. And I think those perceived faults, those perceived weaknesses in the Manchester City side are only really ever going to be shown up against a team that attacks. So all credit to Lee Johnson and to Bristol City for having a real go in that game. And it was a great game. It was a great game to watch.
Absolutely. It really, really was. And Paul Dickov, in your managerial experience, what did you think about Lee Johnson's approach? Pep Guardiola, obviously, first to congratulate him on how his team stepped out at the Etihad. As Paul Serres said, does it show that City can be rattled? And does it raise questions over other teams that have come, the Liverpools and maybe the Newcastles, Rafa Benitez and Jose Mourinho? I mean, does it raise questions as to why they haven't been more attacking when they've come to City?
I think, well, people raise questions all the time against City when they're not at their best. And this is how you get at them. You know, I remember the Southampton game, it was in end of November, beginning of December time. When Southampton came and parked the bus and City managed to win late on with Raheem Sterling's fantastic finish. And people were saying that was the way to go against City, you know. And I think every week when teams do give City some sort of problems, people are going to be grasping at straws, really. This is how you play against Man City. But going back to Lee, I know Lee very well and I know his style of play. And you know, even going back to when I was a manager, it was an easy game for Lee to manage, and I mean that in the nicest possible way. You know, when I was at Oldham, we managed to beat a Liverpool team in the FA Cup. That had Suarez, had Raheem Sterling, Steven Gerrard, Daniel Sturridge. You know, the all the big guns played, and all you've got to say to your players is go out and enjoy the occasion. Nobody's expecting you to win. Go and express yourself. Go and have a go, and that's what fans want to see. Your own fans want to see, and you want. As a player, you want your manager to go and do that. You don't want to be going into the game worried about it and thinking, oh, no, we could get battered here. And do you know what? If Bristol City lost 4-0 and still had the same approach, they would still be getting the same plaudits as they're getting for it being 2-1. You know, it's when you're negative and it puts question marks in the player's mind, which translates onto the fans, that's when you've got a problem. And Lee will do the exact same down at Ashton Gate in the second leg. You know, he'll want to put in a performance for his fans. They'll be in the front foot again. But look, it's hard enough keeping City at bay in one game, never mind over two games. That's the big thing for me on this.
Absolutely. And I think that's really interesting, Paul, and something that maybe we've lost sight of and the press has lost sight of, is that when you take away that expectation from a team like Bristol and you take that pressure off, anything can happen. You know, whereas
absolutely. They'd already had their cup final by beating Man United. You know, so that took the pressure off them even more again. So they could come, they could enjoy the surroundings at the Etihad, which is a fantastic place to play anyway. Their fans were fantastic, nearly 8,000 of them, and they went out and they embraced that, and that showed in their performance.
Absolutely. Paul Serres, the return leg at Bristol, what do you expect from that?
Well, I hope and expect more of the same, really. Two teams that are looking to get on the front foot and space in behind, really, from both. I thought that you know, there were pivotal moments in that game. One where Aidan Flint, all 6'5" of him, nodded over the bar off the line from Raheem Sterling. Raheem couldn't believe that it hadn't gone in. That was a crucial moment in the match because it was relatively early on. Had that gone in, we may have seen a different result. I expect more of the same, and I expect them to have a real go. And what Paul Dickov said was absolutely right. You know, the pressure is off.
Yeah.
And I genuinely believe that when teams, particularly when they come to the Etihad, and even at home, some teams, they're not playing, they play very defensively, they park the bus. I don't think they do it with a view to even trying to nick a result or grind out a draw. I think some of them do so because they're looking towards the league table at the end of the season and a question of goal difference. I really do genuinely believe that because we've seen it enough already this season that if you park the bus against Manchester City, more often than not, 90% of the time, City will beat you anyway. So it's, you know, it's not a case of trying to steal a point. I mean, who's managed that this season? Palace and Everton, and that is it. Palace could have won the game, but they certainly didn't park the bus against City. So there have been enough examples this season that playing that ultra defensive style, six across the back line, it's not going to work. You will eventually be ground down by the way the ball is moved and by the pace and movement of the intelligent three up front.
Yes.
If you sit back, it plays into City's hands. It allows them to, like a boxer cutting off the ring, it allows them to play in your half of the pitch and 90 minutes of that is nigh on impossible to resist. So I'm not complaining, and I'm not saying that watching Manchester City is at all boring, but it is boring to see team after team come to the Etihad and do the same thing. It's not a criticism. I understand perfectly why they do it. But, you know, it's refreshing to see a team like Bristol City come up to Manchester and really try and stand toe-to-toe and trade punches with Manchester City. And I'm sure that Pep appreciated it hugely as well. So I think we're all set for an excellent second leg. And, you know, from watching the first leg of the other semi-final this week, I mean, there's no comparison in terms of entertainment between the two matches. Incredible game between Manchester and Bristol City.
I know Paul's saying there about Premier League teams coming and do it. I just felt that Lee Johnstone, Bristol City, actually embarrassed quite a few Premier League teams and how they've came in and set up against Man City.
Yes,
but absolutely. By going out there and having a good go at them, and it's full credit to them.
Absolutely.
Absolutely.
Okay, massive game away at Liverpool up next, guys. I don't even know where to start. There's so much we could talk about here. But first of all, Paul Diggle, Thierry Henry has come out and said that Liverpool may be the team to stop City. What do you think?
I think that if anybody's got, especially going forward, if any team's got the firepower to worry Man City and getting behind them, like Paul was talking about before, it's Liverpool, you know, especially with Mane and Salah on the other side. You know, Firmino, as much as he plays as a number nine, does come in deep and links up the play, and that allows the space in behind for Mane and Salah to go into that. The one thing I do know is it's going to be an unbelievable game.
Yes.
Because you cannot see Liverpool sitting back at Anfield. And the one thing we all know, Man City, we will not change how we play. It's quite simple for me, this one. If both teams perform to their absolute maximum, Manchester City will win. I've no doubt about that. But I do think, and I'll go back to the game at the Etihad just before the sending off, Salah was causing us a lot of problems.
Yeah.
When Liverpool went down to 10 men, and I was amazed that Jurgen Klopp took him off at half-time, even though they were down to 10 men, because, I was amazed. I was quite happy not to see him come out for the second half, because he was the one player that could cause us a lot of problems. Just touching on the Bristol City game very quickly, I thought Pep rotated his squad fantastically well for that game. You know, because now we're getting into Sunday with, I know Ederson's a goalkeeper, but he's a huge part of how we play. Kyle Walker's fresh. Nicolas Otamendi, who we spoke about last week, is fresh. I know Sergio came off the bench. But the main cog in the works, as we'll talk about, is Fernandinho. You know, I felt we badly missed him on Tuesday night. But having him back in that team in front of the back four with how Liverpool will play and press, I think is hugely important that Fernandinho is in there and play as well. Because, you know, keep repeating myself, he is the one that allows all our fantastic players to go and play. And, you know, we've not even mentioned David Silva coming back into that team either. So there will be fresh legs, but there'll be quality in there as well.
Absolutely. And Paul Serres, until Sergio came on, of course, against Bristol, there was no recognised striker in the starting 11. I can't imagine that being the case against Liverpool.
No, absolutely not. I mean, Sergio has shown time and time again that he's still the best number nine in the league. You know, I mean, I don't think there's much doubt really about that. And we spoke last week about how Sergio has adapted his game to really give Pep you know, to try and integrate and ingratiate himself into Pep's philosophy, and the way that he does that, you know, by dropping deeper, by not just sitting on the shoulder of the last man and looking for those balls into the channels in behind. He's you know, everybody has bought in to Pep's philosophy. There isn't a weak link in the team. There isn't really one in the squad. And where you would expect the weaknesses to be, well, those players particularly, again, we spoke about Delf last week, about how just utterly sensational he has been in that left-back role for the most part. And indeed, Zinchenko, who's not a left-back, coming in and playing such a great game against Bristol City. And we've seen it in the cup games earlier on in the season as well. So those key players are rested. You know, it's been a busy Christmas period for everybody. And, you know, that's the beauty of having such strength in depth, is that you can make those changes, 4, 5, 6 changes week to week, and still go on and get results. You know, Salah's back after he's had a longer break, an enforced break, but a longer break than most over the Christmas period. He's missed the last couple of games with an injury. He is pivotal to that side. He's absolutely crucial, and he has been sensational since his move back to the Premier League. I worry, and I mean, it's easy for Thierry Henry to say, "Oh, Liverpool may be the team to stop." I mean, it's not neither really here nor there, is it? I mean, it's a bit, you know, on the fence slightly from Thierry Henry. But of all of the games that remain, this is the one that I fear the most. I think that, as Paul said, particularly Anfield, that the Liverpool supporters will not allow Liverpool to sit, and nor will Jurgen Klopp. He said this week in his press conference, if you're not brave in your game, you will have a problem against Manchester City. You need to show up. This tells me that, of course, he's going to stay true to his footballing philosophy rather than try and be reactive or try and stop the opposition at home. A great side. They're in a real battle for Champions League spot for next season. And they will fancy their chances. They really will fancy their chances against Pep. Even though he didn't have the best record, of course, when those two were in the Bundesliga playing against the teams playing against each other. I just think with the pace that they've got, with that crowd behind them, with the record that City have got at Anfield, one win since 1981. I just think that I do believe that if City can remain undefeated on Sunday night, I think City have got a real chance of going the season unbeaten in the Premier League. I really do believe that. This is the key game for me. If City lose, it takes the pressure off a little bit. Maybe the lead at the top will be reduced to 12 points, which is still a substantial lead, an insurmountable lead, pretty much.
Yeah.
If we get beyond this game with that 15 points still, or, you know, with a draw from this game, I don't think there's much left to fear in the Premier League this season. But it's not as straightforward as that, obviously.
Absolutely.
No, I completely agree with what Paul's saying there. But the big thing for me on Sunday, look, I think the game will be won or lost by both teams in the first 20 minutes. You know, I think if City can weather the storm, look, I've been at Anfield, that horrendous record, I've took some proper beatings there, trust me on that one. when you're going there, and that first 20 minutes,
tell us about that. What's the atmosphere? Honestly, I mean, I've Nicola, been before many times, but as a player,
Walking down the tunnel, it does give you, look, I'm a Man City fan, they know that, but it's a special feeling walking out at Anfield when you walk down the stairs and you're walking out the tunnel. And you never walk alone getting played. And it does, even as a player walking out there and you try to concentrate in the game, it does make the hairs in the back of your neck stand up.
I'm sure it does.
It does. But when that game starts and that roar and Liverpool come after you, you've got to be so brave as a player, because the whole occasion can take you away from what you're wanting to do. And it just sucks the wind and the energy out of you in that first 20 minutes.
Yeah.
And we know how Liverpool are going to play. They are going to go after Man City from the kickoff, whether they've got kickoff, whether City take kickoff, and they're going to press and press and press and press. And it's how Man City handle that in the first 20 minutes. I think if we get through that, I think once the game settles down, we've got better players than them. That's simple. Mm. Liverpool have got fantastic players, but not all the way through the team. And another thing for me is, I know we're talking about Mane and how fantastic Salah's been, but there's no Coutinho providing the service, and it's who's going to give them the service when they get on the ball. You know, Liverpool haven't really got that sort of craft player that's going to open defences up when Coutinho's not there.
Yes.
And that could be a big problem for them. It really could.
No, totally agree. Now, Paul, Sarah, as you mentioned, the record at Anfield, which is it's a pretty grim one when you look at it on paper. Can either of you remember when that last win was?
Not off the top of my head, actually.
Was it? Only because I think I've seen it today somewhere. Was it 2003, 2004?
Well done, Paul Dickoff. 2003.
Yeah. I've done my homework before I came on.
And a certain actually a former Liverpool striker as well got a brace that day. Nicholas Anelka scoring the winner that day. So since that win in 2003, so the last win that City have had at Anfield, there's been 4 draws and 10 defeats, and City have lost the last 4 games. I mean, Paul Serra, it's more than tough place to go.
Oh, hugely, hugely tough. But I think, you know, if we're being honest, Nicola, if you look at Manchester City's record away from home against Premier League sides over the last 25, 30 years,
yeah,
none of it really makes for particularly pleasant reading.
That's a very good point.
that's the reality of the situation.
You're right.
Be careful. I was playing a lot of the games.
But, you know, I mean, that's the reality of the situation. Yes, we've got a particularly bad record at Anfield and a particularly bad record against Liverpool. But they were, you know, over the last generation, you know, couple of generations, they were the dominant force, not just in English football, but in European football. And Anfield is one of the great places in the world to watch football, and for the atmosphere. And what Paul said is right. They almost beat you, or they can beat you before kickoff. But let's be clear. This is a very, very different Manchester City side, even from Mancini's team, even from Pellegrini's team. This is a very, very different side. And not only will teams, not only do English teams fear Manchester City to the point where they're beaten by them before the game on many occasions.
Yeah.
But I think the great and good of European football, those in the last 16 of the Champions League, are also beginning to fear City. If you look at the coverage elsewhere around Europe, then you will see that teams are paying City the kind of respect that is reserved normally for the Real Madrids, the Barcelonas, the Bayern Munichs of this world. And there's no doubt, with the 15-point lead at the top of the Premier League table, that Manchester City are the dominant team in the Premier League. And, you know, look, Liverpool have had a decent season. They've, you know, they're only 3 points off second spot, but that makes them 18 points off the top of the Premier League table. That's what we're talking about here. Yes, we can go into it and we can think, and it's you know, gallows humour almost from City supporters that we've had for so many years, when we went to Anfield and we expected to lose, but we went anyway, you know, and we supported our team. I think that that's gone now, or it's certainly on its way out. Yes, you still hear the mentions of typical City and all of that, but we don't have that inferiority complex anymore, and it's time that the supporters maybe believed in the same way that the team does, the squad does, and everybody at the club does. Because 18 points after 22 games, you would expect, you know, maybe the top team in the league and 13th or 14th in the division, that you would expect that kind of separation, not first and fourth. This is an utterly dominant season for Manchester City. And, you know, that sort of collective memory of what's gone before against Liverpool and what's gone on at Anfield, I don't think the squad will pay any attention to that whatsoever. They will go there and they will see an opportunity to win a game of football. And how often can you have said that about City teams in the recent past, you know, in the last, since 1981, that one victory? You know, I remember going to Anfield when Sean Gota scored and Kanchelskis scored for City in the cup, and we lost 4-2.
Yeah.
And I came away from that thinking, that's not a bad result, really.
Yeah, we scored 2 goals. You know,
Exactly. And Gota got up at the back post and scored a header, and you know, and to you, to you wouldn't think that this was the same club. The you know, looking back now, it was an awful result. We conceded 4, but you know, it's crazy to think that this is the same football club that we're talking about. And I can tell you this, I don't think many of those in the squad will probably even know about the record. Those that do probably won't care. And they will fear us more than we fear them. And that's a nice place to be.
The point that Paul was making there about Liverpool being 18 points behind, it just shows you what an incredible achievement it has been from Man City. You know, and you look at Liverpool within that, they have not lost a football game for 85 days. And we're still 18 points ahead of them. You know, so So as much as we're talking about
that, good little start, that, yeah.
Yeah, the strength and depth and Liverpool going forward, you know, let's not forget that we are some team at the minute as well. And, you know, we're mentioning three names in Firmino and Mane and Salah. You know, we're going to have Sergio, we're going to have Sterling, we're going to have Sané, we're going to have De Bruyne, we're going to have David Silva back. And it's just so difficult to contain these sort of players. And the confidence that Paul was talking about, that the fans have got, the team just believe that they're not going to get beat at the minute, you know, regardless exactly. of what they've got, because they know that if Sergio's not quite on it, somebody else is going to step up. If David Silva's, you've got De Bruyne, you know, if Sterling's not having the best of games, you've got Sané to do it and Bernardo Silva. And that within the team and within the squad, you go out onto that pitch, and I know I was talking about how it can be intimidating, and how intimidating it can be at Anfield. When you walk out there and you know that you've got a player of the ilk of Sergio and David Silva and the players that they have got there by your side, you know that you've got a chance, and you just don't feel as if you're going to get beaten. And that's what we're seeing with City at the minute.
Absolutely. And again, the mentality we talked about last week, you know, if you're a team playing the way they're playing at the moment, in the form that you're in, and with the collective kind of energy that you have amongst the team, yes, you might get a little bit of nerves, but you're going to know that, as you say, Paul, you know, you've got the players there to do serious damage no matter who you're facing, you know. So, listen, it's very exciting. Cannot wait for the game. And so exciting, as you both know as fans, to see that, to know that actually this is going to be a very, very good game to watch. She says, hoping that is true, but I can't imagine.
But after all this, it'll probably end up 0-0.
Oh, yeah, exactly. Yeah. We'll have nothing to talk about next week. Really exciting times. And listen, cannot wait for it. Okay, let's talk a little bit about transfers, guys. The transfer window is open. As usual, there's been a lot of talk about various players, but the one that we cannot escape is, of course, Alexis Sanchez. Last-minute talks with Manchester United, apparently. Rumours that City think the fee's too high for him. Willing to actually let him go because of that. What are your thoughts? Paul Sarris, I'll start with you. What are your thoughts on what you've been reading in the past few days?
Yeah, I think the first point, and maybe even the most important point of it all, is that Manchester City need absolutely nothing in this January transfer window. Yes, there are areas of the squad that could be improved, and yep. And Alexis Sanchez coming into the club, whether it's now or in the summer or, you know, whenever, yep. would be a huge addition to the squad, you know. And not you know, we've spoken extensively about the Premier League, about the gap at the top, but of course he wouldn't be cup tied for European competition. He wouldn't be cup tied in the FA Cup. So we're adding more quality and we're adding depth to those competitions that, you know, Pep has spoken about the quad. Well, he's not spoken about it. He's been asked about a quadruple for Manchester City. And he's said all along, this is impossible. This is an illusion. This is a dream. It's not going to happen. But if it is to happen, if City want to continue to fight on all fronts, then every team in the Premier League has the same number of players in their squad. So it's not about City having a bigger squad. It's about having better quality in depth. Now, Alexis would add that hugely. To suggest that City need him at the moment, particularly with the news about Gabriel Jesus today, that he might be back for the Basel game, for the Champions League game, having had a nice month or 5 weeks rest, which will work to his benefit in the long term, and probably to the benefit of Brazil going into the World Cup as well. I don't think Alexis Sanchez is needed at the moment. Saying that, City have obviously got an idea of the kind of fee they want to pay for a player that will be available for nothing in 18 games time or 16 Premier League games time. Mm-hmm. And if Arsenal are being demanding and demanding more than City are willing to pay, then City will either be confident that the player will come in the summer on a free, or they'll be willing to miss out on him. And that wouldn't be a disaster. And I'll tell you why. As good a player as he is, and he's a phenomenal player, we've seen in the time that Pep Guardiola has been at the club that there is nothing more important than the collective. And if City are seen to pay over the odds for a fee and over the odds in terms of wages to try and fend off interest from other parties, then that may disrupt the harmony within the squad. And as we said last week, somebody asked Pep Guardiola in the press conference pre-FA Cup game, will bringing in a player disrupt the harmony within the squad? And Pep, we've spoke about this, and it really struck me. You never hear this. And Pep said, if he's a good person, then no.
Yes.
How often do you hear about coaches and managers talk about signing good people?
Yeah.
You know, it's often so far down the list that it doesn't matter. It's negligible.
Yeah.
But, you know, I think Alexis Sanchez wants to come chat out of Chile, you know, where he obviously has good the press have good connections with him.
Yeah.
Is that that he's interested in coming to Manchester City. He'd prefer it now, but we'll wait till the summer.
Well, listen, who wouldn't be?
Well, of course. Well, I'll tell you who wasn't. Virgil van Dijk. I couldn't.
Oh, yeah.
You know, I said on Twitter, I said, if City are genuinely interested and are willing to match the fee that Liverpool would have paid, I'm not sure that they were. I don't know whether
That's
they were
true.
Or not.
I don't know if they would.
Then,
yeah.
Then why would Virgil van Dijk choose Liverpool over Manchester City? And, you know, I respect his decision. Maybe he was a Liverpool supporter as a kid, you know, and, you know, maybe there was no other offer for him on the table. So I don't see why. I'm biased, obviously. I have no problem admitting that. I'm biased. I don't know why Alexis Sanchez would choose United over City as things are. I think he'd be better off staying at Arsenal until the summer and then probably reevaluating, unless his relationship with the club, with the manager, has broken down to the extent that he just wants out. So yeah. We'll see. I mean, you know, if he comes, great. And he will add to, as Kevin De Bruyne has said this week, he'll add to the squad. Definitely. No doubt about that. If he doesn't come, then I'm sure City will still be able to fulfil the objectives anyway.
Absolutely. I'm just thinking about my fantasy football team here. It's going to become very hard if all these people end up at City when we got three choices for the old fantasy team. But anyway, Paul Digoff, I'd really love to hear your thoughts on Sanchez.
Yeah, I've got quite a few points on this. And I'll even go back. I had a little chuckle to myself today when I seen Pep's press conference and talking about Gabriel Jesus. Being fit. No, I just think he was being very clever there, because a lot of people were thinking the main reason we need to bring Sanchez in this window is because Jesus is out long term and he's going to be out quite a long time. And I think Pep's just letting everybody know, especially Arsenal, that they are not going to play over the odds, whether Jesus is going to be fit sooner rather than later or not. He was just putting it out there and putting a little pointer down there to say, look, if you think we really need to pay over the odds for Sanchez now because Jesus isn't going to be fit, well, there you go. And I was quite clever.
Good point.
Of him doing that. As in upsetting the changing room and the team spirit and the camaraderie that they've got there. Look, we are so lucky that we've got the best coach in the world at our football club.
Yeah.
By a country mile. And there is no way he is going to upset any dynamic when it's took him probably a season and a half to get that the way it is now. Yes, winning helps. But it takes a lot of clever management to get a team spirit when you're dealing with a lot of egos. You've got 25 pros in your squad, but to have that team spirit there, and he's not going to ruin anything by bringing somebody in. And I don't know if you guys picked up on it last season. Whenever City played Arsenal, Alexis Sanchez and Pep Guardiola were like long lost brothers at the end of the game, hugging and kissing and chatting, and you know it was as if there's definitely a lot of love between the both of them going on there.
Absolutely.
And Pep obviously knows him personally.
Yeah.
So attitude-wise and upsetting the apple cart to come into the squad, I don't think that's going to be a problem at all.
And to
stop me going on and on about it, it's quite simple for me, this. If Manchester City want Alexis Sanchez now, they'll get him.
Yeah.
If they want him in the summer, they will still get him, because he wants to come and play at a club where he's going to win things. And then that is it. You know, if the club's not going to pay over the odds, they'll wait till the summer. And there's clearly the relationship between the two, between the player and the manager. Sanchez has come out and said he wants to win things. And the one thing Man City are doing at the minute is winning games and going to be winning trophies as well. You know, and that's it in a nutshell for me, guys.
Yes, no, absolutely. And as Paul...
You know, when Nicola, when you're a player like Alexis Sanchez and you've played at Udinese, at Barcelona and at Arsenal, three clubs that are famed for their attacking football. And for the national team as well, when Bielsa took over in Chile, it's probably 10 years ago now, Chile changed their style radically and they became this unstoppable, possession-based, attacking force, and they run all day, and that and that sort of exactly that that mentality, that footballing philosophy continued through Sampaoli and into to more recent times, and it culminated in them winning, having never won a Copa America, two on the bounce. Now I'm not a footballer. Maybe Paul can shed some light on this. If I was a footballer, look, being a football supporter, being a fan of football is a romantic thing. And you dream as a kid playing for your club. And then maybe when you get a bit older, you dream about watching your club play a particular way. And you want to be entertained and you want to win. And you want to be, you want to watch those 11 players on the pitch do things that you could never dream of doing. That's what it's all about. It's fantasy. Yeah. It's escapism, and it's a romantic thing.
Yeah.
Now, I you know, this is a Manchester City podcast, and I don't really want to dwell too much on United. But if you were Alexis Sanchez and you already had more money than you knew what to do with, you knew that you were going to get a bumper contract coming into your prime now as a free agent in the summer. I believe that the style of football that you want to play, that you're going to play for your new club, I believe that that will be vital to the decision that you make, more so than money, more so than, well, if it is a straight choice between City and United, lifestyle is, you know, is irrelevant because it's the same place. Yeah. So I think that it will come down to personal relationships 100%. And the style of football that Alexis Sanchez wants to play. And he is the kind of player that is made for Pep. He's absolutely made for Pep. He's tactically brilliant. He will run all day. He's like he's a bit like Carlos Tevez, who I think would thrive under Pep as well.
Yes.
Maybe not on a personal level, but in a footballing sense.
Yes.
I mean, Alexis Sanchez is made. He's so incredibly fit. You know, he'll run all day long. Pep loves that. He will defend from the front. He will battle. He will really scrap for possession of the ball. And yet when he gets it, he has got the absolute world-class quality to do something incredible with it, and what a motivating factor it must be to go and work. It is work for these guys, you know, as much as they love it, it's still a job.
It is to go
and work with the best in the world, and to really, he is a player that would really buy in to Pep's philosophy. And the way that Mourinho's United have played this season, I'm sure that even United supporters would agree. It is not inspiring in any way, shape or form. It might just be, you know, Mourinho being pragmatic with the squad that he has. I just think that that's Mourinho all over. And I don't think that a player like Alexis Sanchez would choose Mourinho over Guardiola. There may be other factors involved. You know, I'm not party to the information, but I would be very, very surprised if Alexis went to United over City.
The three main factors, Paul, when you're a player and you're choosing a club, and you've hit the nail on the head there. The first one is the relationship that you're going to have with your manager. Mm-hmm. That is huge, and that probably is one of the most important things. The second, you're right, style of play. How are you going to fit into that style of play? How does he see you playing, and where does he see you playing? And third is winning things and being successful. Now, you look at Man City now, favourites for the Champions League. We are, look, I know you, I said it last week, Paul, and you were like, oh, not yet. We are going to win the league. We are going to win the league.
Yeah.
You know, so there's a Premier League medal there for him.
Yeah.
A possible Champions League run, which he's not had this season, which he'll be desperate, a player of his ilk to have.
Absolutely.
One step already to getting into Wembley. And as you rightly said, not cup tied in the FA Cup. Now, Alexis Sanchez could come here for 4.5 months and win three major trophies.
It's kind of really, isn't it?
That is one of the biggest points. And you look at him, you look how he plays, he wants to win things. He wants to win every football match, he wants to win every tackle, and he wants to win trophies. And this is the only place to be.
You know what, actually, I love that comparison to Tevez. In fact, he's got that South American edge, you know, the hard work, the graft, the grit, but he's got that beautiful touch and capable of so much. And I think that was a lovely comparison, actually. And like you say, Paul Dickoff, he clearly wants to win things. So listen, it's going to be really, really interesting when Jim White gets his yellow tie on at Sky Sports deadline day, and we see everything coming to fruition. But listen, let's have a look. Let's wait and see. It's going to be interesting, whatever way it happens. Digov, as you said, he's clearly a man who wants to win things. So it will be really interesting to see how things turn out when Jim White gets the old yellow tie on transfer deadline day on Sky Sports News. But listen, I'm sure we'll all be interested to see how it all works out. OK, really, really quickly then, guys. Paul Serres, I know you said that City have everything they need, which they do, but do you foresee any other transfers? Do you foresee maybe strengthening the defence a little bit, given Vinny's injury? Paul Digov, what do you think?
I think it'll be difficult. The calibre of player that Manchester City want is so difficult to get in this January transfer window for two reasons. And the players they'll want, 9 times out of 10, are probably already at a club that's competing at a high level in the Champions League. And within that, they're probably already cup tied in the Champions League. You know, people have been mentioning Titi at Barcelona. You know, why would you go and spend that money there now when they can't play in the Champions League from now to the end of the season? And then why would Barcelona want to sell him to Manchester City now when they clearly see City is probably one of their biggest rivals in the Champions League? Johnny Evans has been mentioned. I think Harry Maguire was the other ones. But they're all at clubs who won't want to sell right now.
Yeah.
And it's just such a difficult one. They could probably go and buy 5 or 6 central defenders, but they've got to be good enough and fit into the way that Pep wants to play, and that's what makes it so difficult at this time of year.
Absolutely. Paul Serres, what do you think?
Yeah, I mean, Inigo Martinez as well from Spain has been mentioned, and I think the one that would excite me most in terms of central defenders would be Umtiti, and I don't know his contract situation. I know that he's got a release clause at the moment of 60 million euros. The way that Spanish contracts tend to work, these can increase as contracts run down to try and prevent players from leaving cheaply to encourage them to sign new deals. So I wonder if the player is interested in Titi now, whether it might be a possible for City. But I'm sure that Pep is happy with what he has. I think the opportunity with Alexis Sanchez is probably too good to turn down, and probably Pep had maybe begun to plan for his season with Alexis Sanchez. The way, you know, how close it got towards the end of the summer transfer window. Pep said it himself the other day when he was asked a question in his press conference. He said, you work for, I don't know who the journalist was. He said, you work for Sky. You guys talk about transfers all day. I'll let you get on with your job. It's not my job. My job is to coach a football team. So it's refreshing. He's very refreshing, Pep. And even when, you know, I think that one of the fundamental differences between Pep and Jose is even when players have a bad game for Pep, he will never hang them out to dry in public. No. Never.
So true.
And he will say, you know, and we take it with a pinch of salt mostly. He will say, you know, I'm so happy. I'm so, so happy. Yes, X player made a mistake, but did you see him after? He continued to play the way that I wanted him to do. It didn't affect his confidence, and I'm delighted with him. Now, I'm sure that the conversation in the dressing room may have been slightly different. Pep is a perfectionist. He will not tolerate might not be the right word. He will ensure that he works with that player on that mistake throughout the course of the next week. Exactly. He will never hang a player out to dry, you know. He will never ever do that. And I think that's another reason that players want to play for Pep Guardiola. He's a great, great coach. He will go down in history as one of the best. And also he seems like a really nice guy as well. And let's not forget that, you know, these guys are living the dream. You know, Paul Dickov lived the dream.
Absolutely.
He's still living the dream.
Exactly. But also, it doesn't matter what you do for a job.
Yes.
If you don't get on with your boss, if you don't like your boss and you have to go into work every day, it takes the gloss off to a certain extent. That's makes your life more difficult.
That's a podcast for another time, guys.
Well, yeah, I guess so. I guess so. But yeah, I mean,
40 minutes worth.
No names mentioned. I fought the bosses. Probably why I work for myself now. But yeah, we'll see. I mean, look, if we get to February the 1st and City have signed nobody, no problem for me. No problem for Pep. Yes. And
I don't think there'll be too much panic, as you say, Paul. No, absolutely, 100%. Okay, guys. Busy January. I'll just run over the fixtures quickly for everyone who's listening. Of course, Liverpool up next. Then there's Newcastle at home. in the league. Bristol away on the second leg of the League Cup on the 23rd of January. On the 28th is the FA Cup fourth round game, still to be confirmed, of course, who will play there. And on the last day of the month, 31st of January, we will host West Brom at home in the league. So, like we said last week, a really, really busy month. Well, listen, every month is busy in football these days, of course. But lots for us to talk about throughout the course of the month. But we will, first of all, enjoy the Liverpool game. And we will talk about that, of course, next week. Thank you so much, everybody, for listening again. Feedback from the first podcast was really, really strong and positive, so thank you for that. But of course, anything you would like to hear or like us to discuss, or any questions you have maybe for Paul Diggle, for Paul Serres or myself, please do let us know. My Twitter handle is @McCarthy_MCFC, and Paul's, I will let you give yours, Paul Diggle.
@OfficialPDickov, I nearly forgot it again.
And I'm @PaulSerres. But yeah, fire your questions over, and we'd love to hear from you to chat through them next time.
Absolutely. Guys, thank you so much again for your chat this week. We'll enjoy the Liverpool game, and we'll do it all again after that.
Lovely. Thanks.
Perfect.
Cheers.
Thank you very much.
Cool. Brilliant.